We're talking today as we're going through James, and we'll be doing the first half of chapter 3. So if you guys want to go ahead and turn, if you've got Bibles, you can turn there, or you could open your app or however you get there. It's one of those passages that no preacher is really excited to teach on, because it's one about basically saying, don't many of you teach. It's one of talking about stricter judgment that comes as we open up our mouths. And I'm well aware that as I sit here and teach on this passage, like lightning could strike. So we'll pray that God has mercy as we go into this. But let me read our passage, if we can put it up there on the screen too. But if you've got it in front of you, you could read along there and then refer back as we're going back through it. We'll be looking at these 12 verses of chapter 3 on taming the tongue. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For we all stumble in many ways, and if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. If we put bits into the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also, though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they're guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How a great forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. The word of the Lord. This is probably one I could just walk away from, right? And we would all go, yeah, got it. Anybody, as you're listening to this, think of something that you've said that you regret? I remember, and this was thankfully a long time ago, responding to a critical email I received by forwarding it on to another friend of mine, saying something sarcastic with it, only to realize that I had replied to the person and not forwarded. Has anybody done that? Like, pain, right? Like, you're going, no, like, catch that before it goes, oh, it is too late. And I think this is what James is getting at here. Like this tongue of ours. He wants to say it's evil, but he's speaking metaphorically there. It's not the tongue's fault, right? It comes from something much deeper. And yet the words that are spoken can do so much damage. Little things, silly little things. I remember in junior high, I was at my youth group and we were doing worship. And I was, you know, like that sweet little sixth grade kid just belting out the lyrics. And the girl in front of me turned around and said, oh, it's so cute, you can't sing. Like that one just got labeled right there. I mean, still, like, Sarah, why did you say that? Like, that one totally stuck, right? Like, you see this idea of blessings or curses, like the power of these words, how they have this tendency to go really deep and digest in and even become part of who we are. I remember in my mid-20s receiving a wound that sort of sent me careening. And this is a little bit of a random story, so bear with me here. It all started with an injury. Well, it started with a lapse in medical insurance for me. I was in between. I was working part-time, And because of that, couldn't get insurance through where I was going to start school in the fall, so I thought, well, I'll just do it then. But I was a rock climber, took a big fall, shattered my ankle, and the doctor goes, how do you feel about surgery? I was like, oh gosh, like broken bone displaced. That's a whole nother story I won't gross you out with. But there I am, no insurance, having to get surgery and going in and sitting in like the clinic, right, where you're like number 100 on the list waiting to get treated. No control over who your doctor is going to be and all of that. And it took me, in the end, I got a great surgeon, which was awesome. Took me a few years to pay that back. But all of a sudden, several years later, my church asked if I would be willing to go full time. And I'm in my mid-20s, and I thought, yeah, but I want medical insurance. And they came back and said, actually, because this is sort of a potentially a temporary thing, we don't legally have to give you medical insurance. And I said, well, you do. And they said, or what? And I said, I'll quit. In the background, I think it was like I was Tupac, Me Against the World was playing. Felt so empowered, right? Like, shh. And they went back, and then they came back, and they said, fine, victory. Except then a couple of years later, when I was transitioning in my role, I was thinking of going somewhere else and taking on a college ministry position, and that job opened up at the church I was at. And I thought, oh, I would love it. And I went in, and I sat with this person, and I said, I'm thinking of sticking my name in. And he said, don't bother. And I was caught off guard by it. I mean, I kind of thought this whole thing was over, but I said, well, why? And he said, you know, Jeff, some of us around here just don't really feel like you pulled it off. That you don't have what it takes. And there began like a 10-year journey for Jeff. That wound opened up there. The depth of what that did, still those tapes play in my mind. And you go, oh, the power of words. What was funny is this person that had said it, I ran into at my seminary years later, and he was so delighted to see me. Little did he know that inside, like, I was suffering still from those words. And I say all of that because this is, I think, what James wants us to understand as we come to this passage. He's saying you have to be so careful what you say. That even these little words that sneak out can curse someone, can inflict deep wounds, can spread like fire. James is saying here, for all of us, be careful of your tongue. And he says this as a caution, don't aspire to teach, let few of you teach. Because to sit in that position of giving instruction is actually to increase one's authority and, as it turns out, one's responsibility. Matthew 12:36, Jesus says, I tell you that men will have to give an account on the day of judgment for every careless word they have spoken. That's not just teachers, by the way, that's you too. Isn't that sobering? All the stupid little things we've said, or all the things that come out of our mouth when we're angry and frustrated, all the self-protection, all the gossip, all the ways that we say things trying to kind of puff ourselves up, we give an account for. Jesus says, if anyone causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a large millstone hung around his neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. That sounds more like The Godfather, doesn't it? Like you're going to swim with the fish. But those are sobering words. That we have been given this power within us, and it's, I believe, all the way down into our heart that's given this ability to influence. But with it comes accountability, with it comes responsibility. And when we think of leadership, we tend to think of influence. Influence is what we crave, to make a difference, to go out and to be able to impart something or create something and have people follow. It's a wonderful feeling. What we tend to think less of is responsibility. There are a lot of leaders out there that love influence and hate responsibility. And I think what James is saying is like, no, you need to understand the gravity. You need to step into this with caution, with sobriety, with humility. Because we all know that each one of us has a heart that is imperfect. James talks about at the beginning of this book that this is the road, this is the journey we're on, that in fact the trials and the difficulties of our life are making us stronger, giving us endurance so that we will become mature and complete. And here James is going to say, the person that's complete has control over their words. That is the sign of maturity. That the more you grow in that, the more you become whole, the more you are able to speak the truth without the improper motive, the less those things will slip in, the lies or the embellishments, the gossip, the cruel things that come out of our mouths. That's our brokenness where those things spring from. But like James says, that ought not to be. The power of our words, as I said, is this ability to direct. And he's saying you can steer a ship with words. Like a bit in the mouth of a horse, you can direct where it's going, which is incredibly powerful. And let's be clear, it's a good thing. In fact, is our responsibility that we are made to exert creative influence on this world for good. Amen? To be light. We are made to be light to this world. But James is saying, slow down, guys. Don't go jumping in there until you're ready. Go into it with fear and trepidation. In fact, Proverbs is going to say, the beginning of wisdom is fear. Fear of the Lord. Not that you're scared of God, but that you go in with respect and awareness and sobriety. Why? Because we're accountable. It used to be said the first qualification for leadership in the church, first qualification to be a bishop is, I don't want to be a bishop. And there's wisdom in that, right? But that hunger for power generally should be a warning sign to us. The ones that want it, we should be like, whoa, careful. Because power has this way of bringing out oftentimes the worst in us. Or at least revealing what's going on down there. All of us need to go in cautious of ourselves. And this is the thing with teaching and with leadership. It's risky. Leadership is about judgment, which sometimes can be overwhelming. I think there have been times where I've thought, I don't know, A or B. They both look like equally good, equally bad. I used to have a friend of mine, Mark Metherall, who's passed away, but he's a Navy SEAL. He would just go, Jeff, if you got two equal options, just pick one. Just pick A or B. It doesn't matter. Just go with it, right? It's like, make a decision. Don't get stuck. My tendency would be like, I get immobilized, right? And he's like, just go. Leadership, leaders can't predict the future. And yet at the same time, right, you know the cost. James is saying, don't jump in there too early. Let God push you into that role. Go in cautious. And I think one of the reasons is this slippery slope, right? We all know the slippery slope. The fact of the matter is the slippery slope slips just about every way you can think. There's danger in leadership no matter which way you go. I think often we think, well, it's just slippery slope becoming progressive, right? You just start following in the fashions of the day. You start going along with culture. You want to fit in with where all the cool people are going. That certainly is a slippery slope. Another is the desire for self-promotion. That one in there that likes to be recognized. I don't know a leader that doesn't struggle with that one. That's one that you keep chipping away at. I've said this before, but one time my spiritual director said, Jeff, do you always feel the need to say something profound? I said, yes. She said, that sounds exhausting. That's a slippery slope. But there's other slopes. The desire to remain comfortable. Does anyone struggle with that one? To say that thing that like, everything's fine. Let's just stay right here. That's a slippery slope. The desire to fit in with your tribe, to belong. That's a powerful slippery slope. And really, I feel like what James is talking about isn't so much, in the end, our words as our hearts. And really what he's talking about deep down is integrity. That when we think about being mature and complete, he's talking about a heart where there's integrity, a heart that can be trusted, a heart that is going to do the right thing again and again and again. A heart that can be relied upon to do the right thing even when it's difficult. That pursues truth at all costs. Not just being right. Does that make sense? We want truth, which means we're willing to be corrected when we're wrong. It means that we know we don't have it all figured out. It has the right sort of openness that can grow without going and running ahead. I used this example the first week in James, but I'll use it again. This idea, I heard somebody say that wisdom's like a rowboat. That you're rowing forward, but your eyes, you're taking your bearings off of what's in the past. And I think James has got that sort of caution in him. You know, I love C.S. Lewis, but he writes, anytime you read a new book, you need to go read an old book. Isn't that good? Simple little practical advice. You read something new and it's untested. It's interesting. It's good for us to consider new things. Curiosity is healthy. But go read an old book, one that's been like fought over, tested, digested, to kind of hold our posture there. I love the balance and the tension. And I think so much of wisdom is found in this place of tension. James talks about the tongue as if it's evil. And again, I don't think he's really talking about the actual tongue, although it's probably gotten all of us in trouble. If you were to read this too literally, you might actually just cut your tongue out and be done with it, which would be a mistake, but might actually save some of us a lot of pain in the long run too. I think this idea of where is the problem, right? Is it in the heart? The Greeks actually thought it was like in the flesh, right? That the flesh was what was wrong, the spirit was what was right, which is why you see in the New Testament they're struggling a lot as it's going into Greek culture. They really struggled that God could be flesh. Have you noticed that? It was like a big controversy for them. How could God be flesh? Because the flesh is evil. But the Bible has made it clear that this lies in, well, a different organ, in our hearts. Although I don't think it means our physical heart. But Jeremiah 17:9 says, the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? And this heart is like our will. It's our center. It's the center of our soul. And this is the problem, that duplicity, that self-love is like in there like a cancer. That giving enough time, it continues to take more and more ground. Continues to corrupt more and more. And when you combine that with influence, what is going to spread, Scripture would call, is death. Which is where that reference to Gehenna or to hell comes from. Gehenna was this place, it was this dump outside of Jerusalem. In the past, they had performed child sacrifice out there. It was just this horrible place, but this place of brokenness and decay. Weeping and gnashing of teeth. And this is the thing, that those corruptions within us, we want to think, I've got it under control. This is how duplicity is able to live and breathe in our lives, is we've become so good at minimizing it. We've been so good at hiding it, and we're good at getting away with things, which is why when I send that email, all of a sudden, I feel the full weight of my duplicity, right? If it just went to my friend, it would have been a nice, sweet little connection laughing at somebody cruelly. Right? Common enemy intimacy is what this is called. Which is, it's a fraud, by the way. That's not actually intimacy. It feels good, though. It's like sugar. Can't fix stupid, right? Those kind of things that we say. Those little pointed things. When all of a sudden there's accountability, oh, we see our heart exposed. And it should frighten us what we're capable of. My friend Chuck likes to say, I haven't done that yet. And he would say, yet is an acronym for you're eligible too. And this idea of that thing that's in us, when we judge others of like, oh, look at where they're at. The fact is you're eligible too. And I say that aware when I think about my wounds. Jeff, you don't have what it takes. There's probably been wounds that I've inflicted on others similarly. Some maybe to you. Some maybe that I don't even know about. If I have, I'm sorry. Words have this power and they stick, and oftentimes beyond what we're aware of. James wisely says, be cautious about going into leadership. Now, the interesting thing, I've talked to you about how James and Paul kind of are, in many ways, very different than each other, but both were kind of the leaders at the time. Peter was in there too, but Peter was just, you know, he's out there just doing it. But Paul and James would go back and forth and write very different things. Paul is going to say, hey, you want to be an elder? You aspire to a noble thing. Saying, here's the greatest gifts. You should desire them. You should want them. You should ask God for them. You want to prophesy? Ask God for it. You want to teach? Ask God for it. We should long for those things, long for influence, long for glory. And again, you feel this tension. Which one is it? Are we supposed to like run from it, or are we supposed to embrace it? I kind of see these two almost as like, you know, mom and dad. I think some of my kids, well, one of my kids, I want to just tell her, would you just go get a B in school? My goodness, you're so stressed out. She performs 102%, she'll finally relax in a class. Just driven. And I think, oh, give yourself some grace. My two other kids, I'm like, get off your phone, do your homework. Right? And you kind of go, you sort of err on either side of this. And some of it depends on where you're at. James is the one saying, get off your phone. James is the one saying, this is work. You got to do it. Get in there and do it. Trials are hard, but consider them joy. Why? Because it's producing in you a good effect. It's making you strong, steadfast, making your heart one of integrity, making it true. And this idea of restraining our tongue, I think, is probably one of the chief trials we face. James says we can tame wild animals. Can tame sea creatures like Shamu. We can do these things. We can exert our will and control over these things, and yet we are incapable of restraining our own words. This is like the battlefield for us. And I think, honestly, today it's not just our words we speak, it's what we type. It's even the images that we send out. Any of these things influence. It's like the currency of our day, your influence. Everybody wants to be an influencer. They give you free stuff if you're an influencer. You get paid to go on trips, or you get free food, or whatever this, you know, people want to just like, oh, you have influence? Like, promote my product. Influence is a powerful thing. It is the currency of our day. And yet it's dangerous to our souls if our influence goes beyond our character. In fact, that should be our prayer, I think, in this. James is going to say, ask for wisdom and God will give it generously. I think coupled with that, we might say, God, don't give me more power and influence beyond what my character can handle. Matthew 15:11, Jesus says, what goes into someone's mouth does not defile them, but what comes out of their mouth, that's what defiles them. And in 7:18, a good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. My wife just started volunteering at the Ecology Center that's up there in Capo, and she said that someone she was working with the other day just said, fruit cannot lie. Cannot lie. Check the fruit. You know how healthy the tree is. Check the fruit. You know what it's missing, what it's eating, what it's not eating. The fruit doesn't lie. And honestly, our words, they're helpful in that sense. They reveal to us what's going on. So we have to pay attention to them. People are realizing this now, like, so much is being written about EQ, right? Are you familiar with this? Our emotional quotient, right? It's not just about our intelligence. It's about our self-awareness. And this idea of self-awareness, I think, for us as Christians is vital for us in our spiritual growth. To see what's going on and what's underneath, right? To know when we're angry and what it looks like and what it feels like. To not downplay that, but to see the effect that it has. To know what we're like when we're anxious. How we behave. What are our tells that give us away? There's a word that's used in parenting, flooded. You guys familiar with that one? You're flooded right now. The emotions got you. And all of us get flooded by certain things, right? Most of us, probably the news. Flip to the news and you're like flooded immediately. I heard somebody say that because Stephen Colbert. I have some bad news. The news. flooded. The world's wisdom is what James would call it. And when we can spot it, we find ourselves playing those old games. It's what we talked about last week, favoritism. You start catering to the rich, neglecting the poor. Warning, right? Pay attention. Favoritism is a sign that you're falling into these worldly ways. But so too are the words that we speak. They reveal a heart that's broken, a heart that's at war, a heart that lacks integrity. I was with our termite guy the other day, and he taught me the key test. Do you know the key test? Like, you look at and you see, like, oh, I think I see some termite droppings or whatever you call those things there. And he would just go, well, you just get your key out and start poking at the wall. And sure enough, crunch, 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 all the paint starts breaking because underneath there's no wood. Those little critters have been chewing away. And see, I think sometimes we put on such a veneer, such an outward coating of our lives, that even our mistaken words could be a gift to us. They reveal the lack of integrity. We need that, like, key poking there, going like, still broken in there, Jeff. And the reason this is needed is because this idea of being an influencer or stepping into this world in shining light or being salt, this is like our basic command. It's our mission, not just for the people that stand up here. No way, it's for all of us, right? God has you here, us here as a church, because he has plans for us, mission for us to accomplish. I love in Psalm 8:3-9, I've got a slide of this, I think. When I consider your heavens. Whoop. The computer froze. Dang it. Well, I'm going to have to do it the old-fashioned way. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you've set in place, what is mankind that you are mindful of them, human beings that you care for them? And the psalmist says, you've made them a little lower than the angels and crowned them with glory and honor. You've made them rulers over the works of your hands. You put everything under their feet, all flocks and herds on all the animals of the wild, the birds in the sky and the fish in the sea, all that swim the paths of the sea. Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. And I think this is what James is even referring to here. As much as he's saying, be cautious, he's saying this idea of being placed over the animals, being placed in this position of glory, a little lower than the angels, this is our destiny. This is who we're becoming. And this is the work that we need to do. So we go into it aware and we go into it with intention. We live in a world that is desperate for integrity. And when we look at, my goodness, our political sphere, don't you just want to have like one guy you can trust? Some of you do, I realize that. They, you know, all I'm saying is, where's the wisdom? And this is our role. This is one of our deep calls as a church. We're going to see next week to be peacemakers. This is what the church is here to do. To step into this world and diffuse the tension and bring people together. Paul calls it the ministry of reconciliation. And here's the thing, our trustworthiness, our integrity happens in really small things. It's an interesting truth, but like all the data backs it up. We like to think that we build trust in these big moments, in the photo moments in our lives, and it isn't. Trust is earned in the simple choices that we make, the boundaries that we set, our reliability and safety with words that have been given and entrusted to us, our willingness to apologize and make amends when we're wrong, saying the right thing even when it's hard, but saying it with love, not looking down on others, being generous with them. I love in Colossians 4:6, Paul writes, let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. Paul knew what it was like to speak in that demeaning, know-it-all sort of way. This is one of the things that was broken in him at his conversion. And he would later write, if you speak with the tongues and men and angels and don't have love, it's nothing. It's noise. Speak with grace. How do we as a church learn to speak with grace? In our last few minutes, I want to just kind of give us some real practical examples of this. If you want to know, like, how do I grow in wisdom? You can just read like a chapter of Proverbs every day. It's a great way to do it because it is filled with verses on the tongue. And these disciplines, these basic controls are simple things and yet should be a regular part of our regimen. For instance, before you say something, pause and consider what you're about to say. What is your goal here as you're saying this? Proverbs 10:19, sin is not ended by multiplying words, but the prudent hold their tongues. Proverbs 15:28, the heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. You see that way, what you're going to say, don't gush. That's the flooded. When you're flooded, you gush. What comes out? Generally evil. Sewage comes out. Weigh your words. Number two, I said this already, but practice self-awareness. Notice when you're getting angry. Notice when you're starting to react. It feels like this. You stop listening to somebody else and you start thinking of what you want to say. You know what I'm talking about? You start thinking of your next line. Proverbs 15:4, the soothing tongue is a tree of life, but a perverse tongue crushes the spirit. 15:1-2, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise adorns knowledge, but the mouth of the fool gushes folly. I love Proverbs. You know, it's just saying, slow it down. In the middle of that, when you start feeling yourself getting heated, like, it's what the breath is there for. Slow down the pace. Question your own motives. I was saying earlier about my need to sound, you know, like intelligent. There's a lot of motives of what comes out of our mouths. Desire to fit in, desire to belong, desire to say something funny. Ephesians 4:29 says, do not let unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Just a few more Proverbs. 17:9, whoever would foster love covers over an offense. Whoever repeats the matter separates close friends. Like if somebody tells you something in confidence, keep it there. Don't tell somebody else. I mean, we hate that, right? Because that's like currency. When you have a bit of information, you feel like you're in the know. I think that's one of the most intoxicating feelings out there. And it's so tempting to tell somebody else. Proverbs 26:20, but without food, without wood, a fire goes out. Without gossip, a quarrel dies down. All this, do you see how like the power of the tongue and what can be done with just a bit of restraint? Tell the truth. Don't embellish. Proverbs 34:13, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from telling lies. And the last one I have for you, Proverbs 17:27-28. The one who has knowledge uses words with restraint. Whoever has understanding is even-tempered. Even fools are thought wise if they keep silent, and discerning if they hold their tongues. You want to look wise even when you're not? Just keep your mouth shut. People might mistake that for wisdom. Like, wow, that was a lot of restraint. You're like, I was just keeping my mouth shut. But like wisdom 101, that's like basic practice, right? When in doubt. But the truth is our words can heal. This person that inflicted this wound on me found out later. And we had coffee down at Zinc. And with tears, he just said, I am so sorry, Jeff. I'm so sorry. And I look at that and I think, as powerful as that was, as hard as that was, like the whole process, like I think, gosh, would I rewind it and do it over? And when I think about it, in the end, the redemption becomes the bigger story. And this is, I think, where I want to close. James is going, look, with our words, we're going to make mistakes, and we are going to say things, even unintentionally, that are misunderstood, times where it's going to go too far, times where we're going to say things that wound. Some of us have been wounded deeply, and many of us too have inflicted wounds on others. But the healing of going back and making amends takes so much courage. But for me, that act of grace and forgiveness was powerfully changing for me. To realize all my resentment and what I was holding on to and to have to release all of that. feels like freedom. And this is the beauty of grace, is that rather than those being like a check on our record every single time, I think God's judgment responds with mercy for our souls for what we've said. As James just told us, mercy triumphs over judgment. And this is God's response to you. For any of those words that you regret, you bring that to God and you say, I am so sorry. And then you go to the person you've offended and you say, I'm so sorry. And what happens? Trust is built. Light begins to shine. People have hope. Even in our brokenness, God can take and turn that for good. I want to pray for us as we close that we would continue to grow in wisdom. So God, we ask for that. If you would like a blessing of wisdom, go ahead, you just hold your hands out in front of you symbolically. And God, we ask that you would give us wisdom generously. God, that with that you would give us humility, sobriety. God, I pray that our hearts would be growing more and more in their integrity and maturity, more and more like your Son. God, I pray that we would have hearts that could be trusted with glory, that we could shine that light to the world, not for ourselves, but for you and for your credit and your glory. God, I pray for those that we need to forgive, that we would have the courage to do so. And for those we need to ask forgiveness of, that we would have the courage to do so. And I close with this last little psalm. May these words of my mouth, this meditation of my heart, be pleasing in your sight. Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Amen.